I'd like to call a meeting of the Transportation Finance Committee to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but it's a short one that will start when we get the quorum. And is Junkie, represent Junkie in the audience?
Here he is.
Where?
He's just in the back.
Represented Junkie? We don't have a quorum yet. Represent Junkie, we don't have a quorum as yet, but...
How come? Where is everyone?
Well, I guess we have, I think we have it now with the one coming. And we do have a quorum, and Representative Horgan will move the minutes of February 13th.
I'll move the minutes of February 13th, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions on the minutes of February 13th? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. And the first bill up is Representative Junkie, House File 1219. And the chair will move House File 1219.
And Mr. Chair, I believe you have an amendment to do, don't you?
And Representative Junkie, this has been heard in the committee last year. It was in the veto bill. Is that correct?
Is it? No.
Or it's in the policy bill? What?
I don't know. I could pull through with your staff earlier, and I thought we amended some things on this bill last year, and we might need to clean it up. And I think Matt has some info. Before we get started on it.
We don't have an amendment. Was it a large amendment, Representative Junkie?
I think, Mr. Chair and committee members, we're trying to figure out if last year we brought this bill and then we might have amended some other ag weight stuff on there, not the general, but the ag stuff, and then it eventually got rolled into an omnibus, but the bill might have had that on it before it got rolled in, we're not sure. And if it did, we don't want all, we just want the simple bill, which you have in your file, but...
And actually, that's what you have as the original...
I have it as introduced.
So we want to move that House File 1219 all in right. The original form.
We can fix it up later if it's messy. Yeah,
thank all you, right. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Obviously, I don't recommend we do a lot of weight bills, and certainly I don't probably think you have the appetite to do that this year. However, this is one that I think you're familiar with, but to refresh your memory, and by the way, I'm joined by Bruce Clavin, representing the Minnesota Association of Co-ops here, and he's here to answer questions if need be also and lend support. This is concerning dairy trucks. Dairy vehicles out in the country, and the reason we have it before you now is because it also deals with weight restrictions that are coming in the next month here. Next month, usually the weight restrictions go on, and so we're trying to fast track this. Our dairy haulers out there, the people that bring the big silver dairy trucks out to the farms to empty the bulk tanks on the farm and haul it into the processor, they are under federal food law. And federal licensing as a dairy hauler. And under that license, it states that once you pull into a farm and hook your hose into the bulk tank on the farm where the milk's kept, you have to completely empty that tank before you can unhook the hose. You can't unhook it and come back and take the second part of the load later. So because of federal food law, and which they have to adhere to, that's the way they do it, we are seeing larger and larger bulk tanks out there, larger and larger herds, and consequently, under spring road restrictions, because of the way they have to do this, many times they're overweight. And so they have two options at this point. You know, ignore the federal food laws and unhook and go out with the right weight and risk losing their federal license, which we don't want to do, or more likely what they're doing today, or would do if we didn't do this bill, would be to run illegally. So basically what this bill said a number of years ago, and I carried the original bill too, a number of years ago, we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to allow them to hook on, and if they're overweight coming out, what they have to do is get to the first 10-ton road, most direct route, and then in. They can't go down the road and hook on to three or four and then become overweight. So it's one stop at the farm, out to the road, Centon Road, into the plant if they're in that situation. We had put a sunset on it, as you see here, June 1st, 2007, which is why we had hoped to get it in the bill last year. This bill removes that sunset. The reason the sunset was on originally was that Representative Workman at the time, for those of you that were here, remember, he had a task force going on waste because it was such a big issue, and it continues to be. And so we said, well, the task force is going to be, this will be part of their report too, so we'll just sunset it for now so we clean this off the books. At the time, well, lo and behold, and voila, we haven't done anything with weights since then, but we still have the sunset. So unless we move this out into the floor and get it fast-tracked, starting next month now when the spring weight restrictions come in, all our dairy haulers across the state risk being out of compliance with our road weights. And so that's the reason for the bill. It's fairly simple. I believe it's non-controversial, certainly not meant as a vehicle for a transportation bill, or a of any sort, or a other weights coming on. That's not my intent, and in fact, I wouldn't entertain any amendments because it's that important that we get it moving and fast tracked and done. It's really a technical thing, but we got to get it done. And Mr. Chair, that's the bill. And I don't know if Mr. Clavin has any comments more than that, but
we have a question. Representative Jefferson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Junkie. Have we talked to the feds, I guess in particular Representative Overstar, about getting an exception from Minnesota for this process to be able to decouple from the middle of the tank? It just seems like I can understand it in some states where they don't have the freezing process that we have in the northern states here, but for there's got to be some consideration that we don't jeopardize and make criminals of our milk truckers, but also take into account that this takes a toll on our roads. Anytime we're going overweight on our roads, we're causing damage. And so I'd like to see some kind of understanding at the federal level, if we could come up with some kind of verbiage to them that would actually address this issue. And I would think they would be completely understanding on that.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I'll hand it off to my witness.
Mr. Chairman, Bruce Clavin for the Association of Cooperatives. I wanted to make clear this is not an overweight bill necessarily. It's about spring road restrictions. That's where the issue is. When the spring road restrictions lower the weight, so it's only for a few weeks. The rest of the year, there's no issue. And the guys are running legally all the time. So I know with the bridge falling down, it's sensitive about weights and so forth, but this is during the spring is the point of this bill. So the rest of the year, there's no issue with the coupling. But I don't know if the plants have looked into the federal issue at all. I do know that Wisconsin, North Dakota, our surrounding states can always run higher than we can year-round. So I don't know if they have this issue in North Dakota or Wisconsin. We have provisions in the policy bill from last year, 1351, that was raised for all ag commodities, and Representative referenced that. That would have taken care of this, but those are kind of shelved for the time being, and this one is going to be in effect in a couple of weeks with spring road restrictions.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to that point, I mean, if all of the surrounding states don't have this weight restriction that we have, is there documentation that says this is damaging to the roads in the spring thaw?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stevenson, I don't know about that. I don't know if this is an issue in Wisconsin or North Dakota. I only know that their weight for trucks is higher. Like, for example, North Dakota, I think they're running 103.5 right now in the winter, and we're capped at 88 in the winter. So, and Wisconsin is higher on tri-axes, I think, and quad-axes, which is what the typical bulk truck is. And that's all the time. So they have more axles carrying the load all the time. And that's just in the spring.
Representative Hornstein, you had a question? Representative Doty? You were finished, Representative Stevenson?
Yes.
Representative Doty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those members who are not representing dairy districts like I am, this is critical, and I want to thank Representative Junkie for bringing this. That piece that he told you about not being able to unhook means you either blow that day's profit or put it on the truck. So thank you for bringing this.
Could I ask a question of Mr. Junk or Representative Junkie or Mr. Clavin? There really aren't that many milk trucks, I presume, and they usually have pups too, don't they?
Mr. Chairman, there are a lot of trucks with pups. And it doesn't affect every farm. It doesn't affect every load. It will affect some.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious about 1.11 and 1.12. What does that mean?
represent Junkie?
Well, Mr. Chair, what does it mean?
Does it mean 7 times per axle load, or more than 2 times divided by 5, or what?
I guess I'd turn that over to research.
Mr. Burris, do you know what they're talking about? And 1.1 and 1.2 represent their...
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to take me a minute to wrap my head around that one. It's been a little while since I've been in truck race.
I'm actually stalling, Mr. Chair, because I don't have my reading glasses. I left them up in my office, so I can't read it very closely right now.
Yes. It just doesn't make any sense to me, I don't know.
So, it is putting a cap on it. The way I read it, there's still a cap on what they can do, but apparently it covers. Holberg's got some. She's kind of my age.
You'll look cute in them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, these are nice. So it's saying you cannot go more than 2 tons per axle over. So again, Mr. Clavin said, you still want to run with as many axles as you can and pull the pups and everything else. You don't want to grossly exceed the weight in the truck. So they actually put some upper limits on, probably to appease at the time, I'd have to say, the road engineers out there and the county engineers like you used to be, Mr. Chair, who worried that we'd take a single-axe truck and overload it and really do some damage. So they're basically, I think, Representative Earhart, the way I read it is they are putting a top limit on it so you just don't go crazy out there with the vehicle. That's my read of it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, can anybody tell me how much per axle we can run with that? That's what I'm curious about. I think that's a weird way of saying it, but...
About 5 tons per axle, and you can go up to two tons over on this short trip we're talking about.
So that's 7 tons
per axle.
Mr. Chairman. Okay.
For accident.
Why in the hell did they just say that?
It took me a while to get the glasses. Huh?
I guess we have the answer then. We don't need it. We got the answer. Any other further questions? Not the chair renews his motion in House File 1219 be passed and sent to the floor. It came from the floor, so it goes back to the floor.
Yep.
Any questions? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. I mean,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
1219 passes, going to be sent to the floor. Thank you. And the change in the agenda, we have Representative Winkler has to be in another committee, so we're going to move him up on the agenda. We did check with the other people on the agenda, it's okay. And unless someone else wants to move, the chair will move House File 2813. Recommended that it would be held over. This is a policy bill, I think. To be held over and included in the policy bill. Representative Winkler, is that what your intentions are?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's my understanding of where this is supposed to go. Mr. Chair, members, this is House File 2813. In short, by terms, it requires the Department of Transportation to prioritize for funding in the metropolitan area projects that have gone through the Metropolitan Council's TAB board review process and have federal funding waiting for them. With me today is Jeff Jacobs, the mayor of St. Louis Park, who will just give a brief kind of rundown from the city's point of view about this TAB process and the importance of this bill.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak briefly here this afternoon. I don't have a pair of reading glasses. I just had the Rock'em Sock'em LASIK surgery here about a week ago, so I've been putting my eye drops in an effort to try to turn back the hands of time. If the next thing you get to me is in Braille, you know how well that went. So I'll do the best I can here. I want to speak in favor of Representative Winkler's amendment to the bill this afternoon. I can give you a brief perspective. We have one project in St. Louis Park that I think has a regional significance at the intersection of Highway 7, which is, of course, a major regional corridor going east and west through our community and Wooddale Avenue. We have already gone through the Transportation Advisory Board process with that, and we're awarded about $6 million of competitive funds for that. It is, that represents about a third of what the project would need. What we're talking about doing is a grade separated intersection to take Wooddale Avenue over Highway 7. Obviously, there is, as the committee probably knows, there is a time limitation to many of those TAB funding projects, and we are currently kind of faced with a deadline to use the to start the project, like 2011, or the federal funding will go somewhere else. It probably won't go away from Minnesota, but it may well leave that project. And so that was kind of our experience with it. As the committee may know, this is a fairly competitive project or process, and one which requires a showing of a regional significance, and obviously that does. And so that isn't really why we're here, to talk about our particular little pet project. I'm here more to talk about the, in support of the bill, because as I read it, I think the intent of this is to require MnDOT and the Met Council to cooperate and coordinate their projects even better than they already are, to prioritize those projects and put them in line with that competitive process which is in place through the TAB board. The bill, as I read it, would require the agencies to follow that process and so that we can avoid the conundrum that St. Louis Park may be in by seeing some of those TAB funds dissipate or get used for other projects if we can't find the additional funding. Yes, question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that. When I'm in the mayor, I'm always asking questions. Sorry about that,
Are there any questions?
There are, yes.
Representative Nelson.
I guess I'm a little sensitive in this. As I said last year in one of our field hearings we had, that when somebody was complaining about the project had been on the books for 10 years, and former mayor of Brooklyn Center talked about a project that took 40 years to get completed, and it was actually Highway 100 north of 394, that was on the books starting in 66 and didn't get done until 2006. And having a project in my district that got the money stolen from it, I guess I'm going to say it that way, may not be politically correct, but to do 212, or not to, excuse me, to do six crosstown, Highway 62. I guess the question I have is, would this mean that if local officials ran around and got federal money earmarked, and then that would mean that MnDOT would not be able to use their best judgment to decide which project is done, but we'd be at the mercy of the earmarks from the federal government, and therefore projects like Devil's Triangle would never get done because there's no money earmarked for it.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, in fact, that wouldn't happen, because it says not only does it have to have federal money waiting, but it also has to go through the TAB process in order to qualify, which is a competitive process which is reviewed by first the, I think it's the TAC, the Transportation Advisory Committee, which are the engineers, and then it goes through the TAB process, which is competitive with all metro projects. And so I guess your suggestion is that you can do a political end around in Washington to move yours up the front of the line in Minnesota, and that's not how the bill would operate, I don't believe.
Yeah, and that would be, I think, as I read this, it looks like it provides more of a rational basis for the agencies to do exactly the opposite of what your fear is, so that when you do have a project like our Wooddale and 7 project, or like any other project that has gone through that competitive process, and it is a pretty extensive process, by the way, it's a very lengthy application, and the folks that are on the TAB board are pretty cognizant of the regional nature of those kinds of projects, and that's the reason they get that kind of funding. So it is not a small little local project. It is a Highway 100 type of a obviously regional kind of a project, or like Highway 7 for our little our area. It would provide that rational basis to be able to compel the priorities to go to those projects that have already gone through that process. It requires an adherence to the process. It kind of gives you the ability to tell people like me, no, if we were trying to do an end run around, it would give you the exact opposite result. So. I think Representative Winkler's change is a good one and a rational one, and we're always sensitive to the sort of the chronic lack of money that MnDOT is facing, and we've actually had a very good working relationship with MnDOT and applaud their efforts, and this gives them some priority to some ability to do that.
At some point in the questioning, we'll bring MnDOT up too. Representative Kalin?
I think Representative
Nelson.
A follow-up on that, I guess I just may be overly sensitive because I watched what happened at 610 when I first, my first year in the legislature. I've watched what happened at the Devil's Triangle, which is Highway 169, and I guess looking at the system there, can go around the state, other projects, and other parts of the metro area. Everybody has these concerns. I'm well aware of the what's happening down there, but it's just a concern I have that, you know, we're now going to have another way to get people to jump up and down the system and projects drop off. And I know in our area of the metropolitan area, we're overly sensitive about the fact that it seems like our projects always end up on the bottom on the list or are scrapped first and then never get back to the top. So that's just a concern I have.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler. I think that I know that I support the principle of the bill. Federal funds coming in, projects ready to go, they're held up by limited state funds. Hopefully we're going to resolve that issue within the next week or two here, or at least move significantly down the road. But a question that I have is that there are eight counties in the MnDOT metro area, and there are seven counties in the Met Council area, and Chicago County being the eighth metro county, we end up struggling over some scraps in some ways on area transportation project funding and other issues because we're in kind of an oversized district right now. We also have some significant federal funding sitting there, but I'm wondering if you could just address the one of the reasons why I did not sign on to co-sponsor the bill is because of this hesitation about this overlap in the metro area and the Met Council, especially becoming the dominant player here under the scheme as written.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I guess my response would be in a the way the world should work is that those would be coterminous jurisdictions. It would be the same counties involved in both. I think that there are probably any number of problems with bills that deal with regional planning through the Metropolitan Council and transportation having separate regions. If you want to introduce the bill to make them the same jurisdiction, then this would apply equally to Chicago County, but I don't know that we can wait to resolve any issue like this until those jurisdictions are all lined up evenly. And if there's a way to address the concern, I'd be certainly open to it.
Just a real quick follow-up, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler. Representative Hausman and I and a couple of others are starting to talk about maybe a statewide or larger regional planning agency authority of some sort that's not that moves beyond the Met Council's 1970s mission and looks sort of updates it and recognizes the changes. And Chicago County will likely not be joining the Met Council within the next millennium, but I'll talk with you some more about some ways we might be able to resolve some of these jurisdictional issues. But appreciate the gesture of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm still not understanding. Would you outline the total cost of your project, what's been approved, and why you're having problems moving this forward, and why this would help?
What I can say, Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, the total cost of the project, I'm going to use a little ballpark number here, was the last time we looked, was about $18 million. The TAB board has competitively awarded us about $6 million of that, a little less than that, like $5.9 million, something like that. The city of St. Louis Park has already spent approximately $3 million to do land acquisition and some site improvements around it. So we need, you know, another, you can see how far short we are at this point. And the rest of it is, and MnDOT supports the project. They've told us that. They believe it's a good project. They pretty much. And so the way the TAB board works is that money is given to you for a finite period of time, and our period of time is fast approaching. I mean, it's 2011 sounds like a long distance away, but in the construction world, that's really not true. It's quite close. In fact, we've gotten the money it's several years ago. So our concern is if we don't find the additional money, the $6 million from the TAB board will go away. It will be allocated to a different project. It will dissipate someplace. No, we don't know where. And we have to start back over again.
And Mr. Chair, what pot of money are you trying to get the $9 million from?
Whatever pot of money we can find. I don't mean to be facetious. We've asked for money from federal sources, from state MnDOT sources, and so far we've been told that the funds just don't exist.
Right,
it's mostly a state project.
Right,
it's a state project.
Mr. Chair and maybe Representative Winkler can answer this. I'm still trying to figure out how this actually helps. In fact, it my first reading might actually hurt you in that if there wasn't additional money, the TAP's not going to give you the money in the first place. You put language in here like this because they're going to put, they're going to then have a higher priority to projects that they know that the money's there. So, I mean, it could backfire on you, number one, but are you saying that this $9 million needs to come out? Is it a, it's a state highway, is that correct?
Highway 7 is a state highway, yes.
Okay, and so there's no, you're nowhere in the STIP anywhere for this project moving forward?
Not as far as I know, unless somebody can help me. I don't think we have any money.
Representative Holbrook, too.
We are.
We've had NDOT come up with SFI, too.
Some city that might be able to help us on that one. I don't know whether we are or not, to say the truth. Marcina, over there?
Well, I'm Lisa Honnold. I'm a management assistant for the city of St. Louis Park. And actually, we are in the STIP process because we were awarded the money through the Metropolitan Council's process through their 2005 regional solicitation. So that's where the money came from. And in part, the city applied for it because MnDOT supported the project but was wondering whether or not it was of regional significance that could maybe change where they put it in the funding. So the city, in cooperation with MnDOT, did go ahead and apply for those funds, and then once we were awarded the funds, MnDOT still approved the project and their financial outlook had changed significantly. So the city has been working with MnDOT to do that. We would not go ahead and apply. And I think that's true for all of the communities that are applying for money through this. And this isn't about just St. Louis Park. It's about Lakeville. It's about you know, all the different communities that are out there that are participating through these processes. So they work with MnDOT to try to figure out where those priorities are before they go ahead and apply.
And
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, thank you. But so when you were talking about MnDOT helping you with an application, was there application assistance for the TAB money? Or I'm still not, you guys still aren't being real clear on what parts of money and...
The city of St. Louis Park actually contracted with a consultant to actually prepare the application. We did that out of pocket on our own. MnDOT provided technical assistance to us in terms of the application and the specifics.
For the TAB money?
That's correct.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. So then what is your plan currently for the additional $9 million?
We are very hopeful in the city of St. Louis Park that there will be a comprehensive funding package that's passed that will allow MnDOT to be able to fund the projects that they want to fund. Our working relationship with MnDOT is
great.
We have a good working relationship with them. It's our understanding that the reason that this project, Highway 100, a number of other projects in the metro area aren't being funded is because of a, you know, it's not.
And, but Mr. Chair, the pot of money that I'm assuming is the Trunk Highway Fund that you're hoping to get your $9 million from the Trunk Highway Fund, is that the Metro Division of the Trunk Highway Fund? Where?
I would guess that that's where that would come from because it is a state highway.
We can call the MnDOT people up.
Yeah,
Representative Holbrook, it's okay for MnDOT up.
Yeah, I think because I'm still not understanding where they think they're going to get the money from.
Someone from MnDOT would prepared to come up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Leader. For the record, my name is Abby McKenzie, and I'm the Director of the Office of Investment Management. And MnDOT does not support this legislation because there are needs beyond for many projects, and many projects that we have supported in concept that are not within our financially constrained plan. And specifically, I'd like to read from you the letter we sent to St. Louis Park when they asked for our support of this project, and we said we do support this project. However, MnDOT does not have sufficient funds at this time to financially commit to this project. This is true of many projects that go through the TAB process. If we were required to fund all of these through the Trunk Highway Fund, there would not be adequate funds to fund critical infrastructure needs such as bridge improvement and replacement. These kind of projects would simply take up the vast majority of our construction from. So at this point, being forced to prioritize projects that have received partial funding from some other mechanism is simply not possible, and while at the same time meeting our critical needs to preserve the transportation infrastructure.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And given how the situation works with the matching money, could you see this language as actually being detrimental to the TAB process, in that if TAB knows that this priority is in place and they in fact won't award TAB money to projects unless there's enough money for MnDOT to make it a priority? It's kind of a chicken and the egg thing here, but if you turn this process upside down as a result of this legislation, I'm guessing that the TAB's going to change their standards to make sure that there's MnDOT money before they even award any money to a project.
Well, I'm not staff of the Met Council. I certainly wouldn't want to represent their policy, but exactly, if a community comes forward and says, we've got this project funded, and we would like, you know, some money from your federal funding process to make the project whole, and then in the next year it had to come out of state trunk highway funds, I think that would make any kind of commitment very difficult to make, and certainly planning for MnDOT's own priorities very, very difficult as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westin-Wakeley, do you want
to? I was just going to comment quickly that coordinating the priorities that are set through the TAP process, which is a competitive process looking at a whole variety of projects and prioritizing them based on a regional look, and making that consistent with MnDOT's prioritization of projects wouldn't be, I don't think, a bad thing, even if, so long as the competitive nature of the TAB process continues.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, and please accept my apologies because I've learned so many acronyms and other names in the just the last week. The financial constraint plan. Could you tell me what the financial constraint plan consists of? There's a term that's new to me.
I think it's what you would call the SIP. The Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan is a federally required document that shows how we're going to spend all of our state and federal funds for the next 4 years. The Met Council, specifically the TAB, programs a certain of those dollars, but obviously there are many other dollars, and that whole program needs to be financially constrained, and we must demonstrate to the feds that it is financially constrained. And so in each of the years of the SIP, all available federal and state funds are committed. And so to suddenly make room for other projects to which MnDOT has not made a financial commitment would take funds out of critical infrastructure needs, bridges and preservation particularly, and other priority projects. So that's our very serious concern with this proposal.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You didn't tie in the completion of Highway 100 and those bridges there with this. This is just the intersection that you're talking about. Is that correct?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, this bill isn't about that project at all. That project is merely an illustration of the process that is used. Personally, I'm not aware of whether a TAB process for those bridges has been done on Highway 100. I doubt that it has. It's affects part of MnDOT's planning process.
Well, you know that, Mr. Chairman, that there were some emergency repairs near on those bridges right there. The concrete was falling off of them, and they shut down Highway 100 several times to do that. Is that another example of constraint?
I don't believe that was addressed to me.
Well, Ms. McKenzie, last year, I think it was, they shut the Highway 100 down because the bridges were falling down in pieces. Not the whole bridge, but chunks of it were falling off on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, well, that would be the type of critical infrastructure need that we would want the flexibility to address.
Well, at least, Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Chairman, if those bridges fell down, they wouldn't be over water. They'd only bring the trains down with them when they came. So I hope that's on somebody's list. and it's going to be one of those that we repair with the transportation funding bill we're trying to pass here.
Yeah, any further questions? You have more comments, Ms. McKenzie? Representative Winkler?
Nothing further, Mr. Chair, other than that this is simply an attempt to make a competitive process that's used in the metro region part of its priority for transportation spending in Minnesota.
Are there any other testifiers in the audience? If not, the question reoccurs that if House File 2813 be recommended and passed for inclusion or be held over to be included in the policy bill. Wait, we don't, that's right, we're just going to include it. We'll just lay it aside, that's okay. That's for the policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Just to ask a question, Representative Conan, I believe Representative Clark has something that she needs to go through. Is it okay if we move her ahead in your agenda? Have you got people that have to leave right away? Okay. You got people that, I don't know how the weather is, I haven't seen it, but if you got people that come, I think you have. Is Representative Clark, I presume you're going to talk fast.
Yeah, this could be very brief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to committee. Representative Clark, someone who moving the bill, if not, Chair will move House File 2626 to go recommended to return to the Finance Committee. We'd appreciate it, Representative. We're moving ahead, and I think, as I see the gentleman there, they get long-winded, and if you just advise them that we are in a time frame.
Chairman, we're going to be short and sweet. I think you must know each other. This is a bill that would help our senior citizens be able to have an identification card that both provides security that they right now don't have in terms of riding the bus and affordability. And so the bill is very simple. It just would create an identification card for seniors where there is no fee for getting a senior discount on the bus. And the money that it would, there's reimbursement of $5 per identification card to the counties and the cities that are issuing the cards. This is again through the driver's license motor vehicle division. So I'll start, this was brought to me by a constituent, Mr. Chair, who brought to me what I thought was a very sensible bill and an important concern. And Mr. Davis wanted to start and make a couple comments, and he will be short.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Davis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Doug Davis. I'm a longtime resident of Minneapolis in Minnesota. I've been over here advocating for senior citizens for quite a few years on various issues. But today we're testifying in support of House File 2626. And we believe that this will benefit all senior citizens in the state. The bill authorizes the state to issue an identity card for senior citizens for use in transit. The problem it attempts to deal with is identity theft. We're all aware that there seems to be a stepped-up effort to defraud senior citizens. And what these thieves need is critical information. Social Security number, credit card numbers, bank account numbers. Almost all of us seniors have been told, don't tell anybody your Social Security number. Leave your card at home. Well, senior citizens are extensive users of rapid transit. And we Senior Citizens Advisory Committee of Minneapolis, we did a survey a short while ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, and we found that one out of every three senior citizens living in Minneapolis don't have a car or don't drive and depend on the bus for them. So when we want to take advantage of the reduced rates on Metro Transit, for example, we're expected to carry our Medicare card with us and show it to the bus driver. The problem is the Medicare card also includes our Social Security number. And so House File 2626 would allow us to use a state-issued card which would identify us as senior citizens and allow us to board the bus without revealing our Social Security number. Thank you for your... I urge you to support the bill, incidentally. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. David. The other gentleman has some comments.
Yes, Mr. Charles Rosenfield would like to put prior to this. He's actually the constituent of mine who brought me this concern, and we figured out the solution that was just described by Mr. David. So, Mr. Rosenfield, why don't you tell us a little bit about your
comment. Welcome to the meeting.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Charles Rosenfield. I live in Minneapolis. I'm also with the advisory committee to the mayor and the city council in Minneapolis, and I work with the safety committee in Stevens Square. I get many complaints about them having to carry the Medicare card. I myself am a bus rider, and I have to carry a picture ID and my Medicare card, which is my Social Security number. We have the police department and the city attorney's office do come to our meetings regular, and they had said that never carry your Social Security number with you. But I look at we're kind of forced to. Living on a limited budget every month. During the day, on a non-rush hour, I only pay 50 cents. For a bus for 2.5 hours to go in any direction, which I can do my shopping then at that time. But without that Medicare card and some kind of a picture card, you do not get that discount. So I really would ask you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a fiscal note in your packet. Representative Holmberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't see where the bill addresses not having to show your Medicare card.
I have a schedule right here. In the back of the schedule, it states, Medicare card holders to qualify to show Medicare along with photo ID.
Mr. Chairman? That's correct. And to answer your question, the way it deals with that is it provides an alternative ID that does not require them to then also be able to have their Medicare card. And the alternative ID is the state ID that would be done as our normal state IDs are done, but with no fee. And those state IDs do not have the security number on there.
And it identifies them.
And it's already existing system that we're tapping into. I mean, we thought about, could we have the Met Council devise a new card? We thought the way to handle this instead was to use the existing system that creates the cards, give them back some subsidy to pay for this on the local level, and that's the reason for the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, so in other words, current processes right now, if you have a state ID card and are over the age of 65, you don't need to show a Medicare card, is that correct?
You do need to show a Medicare card if you want to get the reduced rates on the bus.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know how a state ID card is going to negate the necessity for the Medicare card if they're making them do that now.
The Medicare card has on it your Social Security number.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. But if a state... I just see that what your bill does is that it just makes the state ID card that's currently in place free.
That's correct.
But I don't see anywhere where it addresses the issue of having to show your Social Security number in order to get on a bus for a senior rate.
My understanding is that a state ID card would be acceptable to the bus drivers and that it is acceptable to the system. Okay. You need to pay for that and have it renewed every few years.
No,
and that's the problem. And so this is to take care of it by...
I understand that. And I guess the other thing I would look at to try and reduce your cost is maybe you don't pay this $5 fee to the licensing offices that are run by counties and cities and have DVS just do all of them. You know, so then you have less general fund liability. I don't think seniors would care one way or another
where they get it just so that they could get it.
Representative Clark?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, I guess what we're trying to do is avoid the opposition from the local units of government that might have a problem, the cities and the counties who are creating the cards. So we wanted to make that, hold them basically harmless. And I guess the committee could decide differently.
No, Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, I was wondering if there's a possibility of working through the Metropolitan Council, given the fact that we're going to be in a major budget deficit and the fiscal note is probably going to be a problem for the bill. I just wonder if there isn't some way that Judge Shetman from the Met Council and the Met Council could work on a some sort of ID card that they can manage within their existing budget as a substitute for seniors instead of them having to use the Minnesota ID card.
Mr. Chairman, we did look at that. The problem, I guess, is that right now they have no current machinery in place to create these cards, and the startup and the cost for that would probably be more expensive than going with the existing opportunities that are there through our local counties and cities that already do create their driver's license cards, state ID cards. So I don't have a problem with that, but I think the cost would probably even be higher, and there would be more of a barrier to passing the provision.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I wonder if there isn't some change that they can make in their policy so that it's similar to a card they already issue. The problem is we have a horrific deficit, and we just, you know, when we get bills coming through here with the fiscal note, we have to think about other ways we could accomplish the same objective that don't cost money. Because I think what we'll be looking for, especially if we don't pass a new transportation funding bill with user fees in it, is things that we can cut, not things that we can add.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I guess the question that Representative Holberg was going at, and I was thinking here, what about people who have driver's license? If you have a driver's license, that's the state ID card, in effect. You still are required now to have your Social Security card with you?
If you have a driver's license and you had a stamp with a T, it's got to be stamped with a T before you could get on with a discount. That's for transit. You can get a state driver's license with a T that would give you the discount. But many of the people that I've talked to do not have a driver's license. They don't drive.
Mr. Chair, I understand. I understand. So did that. I guess I'm just looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Hausman?
Mr. Chair, I think the suggestion that Representative Hortman makes is a good one, and I happen to know from an experience my husband had in Boston you have to go just once, and the transit authority gives you the card that indicates you are eligible to ride at a discount. Not here, I'm saying in another. Mm-hmm. So my sense is that this would be certainly something that that Metro Transit might just if it's a suggestion to them, that we ask them.
Any comment, Representative Clark?
Mr. Chairman, I think we probably have to require them to do that, and I don't have a problem requiring them to do so. But then I guess this committee would be the committee that they modified this bill that would still pass this legislation through without requiring them to do it. I don't think they're going to just offer to do it. And the idea was to have a permanent card. And we were just thinking the simplest way to do it would be to go through the existing mechanism. But I have no problem if this committee would prefer that we ask the Metro Transit to do that and for them to pay for it out of their existing budget. It's really your advice I'm seeking.
Representative Clark, if I may suggest, we'll vote to pass it without recommendation so you can judge to the Finance Committee, you can review it with them, because I think we can just belabor the thing. We're probably not getting any further. Is that okay?
That's fine. And I will make a commitment to have that discussion with them and indicate that what the discussion's been here.
Representative Holmberg.
And Mr. Chair, just to that point, if in fact the solution requires expenditure by GVS, then would we see that in a transportation bill?
In the transportation policy bill, right?
Well, Mr. Chair, there's general fund and then there's special revenue, and I'm assuming the cost for the special revenue is related to DVS. And so if a solution is found in which general fund reimburses DVS, I think we're all fine. But if a solution is found that doesn't leave DVS whole, then I think we need to have a discussion in transportation finance about that.
Right, it would appear that way, because I think we could have a hole in it. It's a little hole, but there would be a hole in the special fund, probably. Because I understand special funds in some problems because the technology needs some equipment or something. Yeah.
Thank you, Jim, and I really appreciate it. This is a public safety issue for a lot of seniors, and that's why we brought it for you. Thank you.
So, unless there are further questions, will the chair will move that the House File 2626 be referred to the Finance Committee without recommendation?
Thank you.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary? No. The motion passed.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Koenig? Koenig. Welcome to the committee, Representative Koenig. Do you have anyone that's going to move your bill, or do you want us to move it?
Mr. Chair, I will move the bill.
Representative Hausman moves House File 1785 be recommended to held over and inserted in the bond committee. Representative Koenig.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen, for moving yourself around in the agenda. I think Mr. Short wanted to stay overnight anyhow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I believe, too, that I would like to ask the committee to make one oral amendment on line 1.19, change the year from 2007 to 2008.
Sounds like a good idea, so we'll just make that as a technical.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Coleman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. This is a bonding request, an appropriation request from bond proceeds, and it's for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority to rebuild the rail line between Norwood Young America and Hanley Falls. Now, this, I'd like to make it clear to committee members, this is a publicly owned railroad is why it's eligible for bond money. It's not privately owned, it's a publicly owned railroad. The railroad has many customers, and with a wide variety of freight that it hauls, and there's a potential for growth in the future, not only growth in business for the railroad, but growth of business potential along the rail line or in the region if the railroad is updated. Also, this will provide jobs, not only for the rebuilding of the railroad, the construction work itself, but also the potential new jobs as businesses expand and grow along the line. And one last point I would like to make is that it will save highways as more freight shifts to the rail line and off highways. I have four people, Mr. Chairman, here who are going to explain the project further. Mr. Gene Short, Vice Chair of the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. Scott Blumhofer, Vice President of Heartland Corn Products. Jim Johnson, Grain Division Manager for United Farmers Co-op. And Mark Wegner, President of Twin City Western and Minnesota Prairie Line. And committee members and Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to add that Representative Morrow has put a lot of time and effort into this bill, and he'll have good things to say about it. And with that, I believe Mr. Gene Short will start the presentation.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Short.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for getting us on your agenda today. With a lot of interest that I, as the elected official, as a county commissioner, sit and listen to some of the testifying that has gone on earlier today. Excuse me. And I appreciate the comments from the senior citizens on what they're trying to accomplish. And in my other life as a chair of the 27 County Area Agency on Aging. It's nice to see the efforts that are being done with this, so just wanted to mention that. I'm sure there'll be another 27 counties out there supporting their efforts. So thank you for just letting me put that plug in, Mr. Chair. Some of the information that we've sent to your committee administrator in advance of this meeting, I believe you picked up, and one of those is the information from the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority on 2007 report, and it was dated January 16th. It tells about what we have done in this past year plus the previous 5 years. We, as a publicly owned, statutorily created local unit of government, have been able to rehab a railroad, bring it back from the Phoenix era, and starting to move freight. We started with zero cars in 2002, and this past year have moved upwards to 5,900 cars. As a result of that shipment of product, we've been able to reduce the truck traffic along Highways 19, Highways 212, Highway 5, by approximately 28,800 trucks per year, and that's just one way. With the weight of the trucks versus what we're able to do with rail, we have the ton miles figure which is used. Reports have been done, studies have been done by both the University of Iowa and Kansas, and it relates to about 6 cents per ton mile. This past year, we shipped approximately 50 million tons of product. That would relate to approximately a 2.961 million dollars in savings on the deterioration and the wear and tear on our highways. Since its inception in 2002. For those previous 5 years, it would result in about a $16.7 million savings to the state of Minnesota, to MnDOT, and to our federal government in highway reconstruction. As you read on the second page of this article, you'll see the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority members consist of the Shippers Association and one county commissioner from each of five counties, for a 94-mile contiguous rail line that runs from Hamburg to Hanley Falls, Minnesota. We virtually cover an urban area, we cover a ag area, we cover a mining area, so there's untold numbers of products that can be shipped on this rail line. We have been very fortunate in this past year to see increased production and increased shipment by one of our ethanol plants, and kind of fun to be part of something that's shipping gold back to California. Just as another short little piece of history, we have been able to draw down in the past 6 years $5.5 million in federal grants that have helped rehabilitate the rail. We have been able to secure a $4.8 million loan through the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, which is the division of MnDOT Freight and Rail. At a 0% interest, we've been able to obtain $600,000 from our Shippers Association and the Rail Authority. And previous to that, in the 2006 bonding bill, a $1 million bonding bill fee. At this point, all of that money has been expended. It has been put into the rail. It has made this virtually possible for this to happen. As you review House File 1785, it does request $30 million in appropriation from the bond proceeds, and because of the status of the budget within the state of Minnesota, we are willing to and eager to work with the legislature on whatever means or methods that are possible for us to do something. And if this has to occur over a 2-year or a 3-year or even up to a 4-year period, we will be willing to do that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to defer to our shippers, who are the main reason for this happening, and they in turn, I believe, will call the president or operator up, and I will remain standing and ready for questions if you have questions.
Fine. Who's the next gentleman?
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're going to change the order slightly. First of all, Mr. Chair, committee.
Identify yourself.
Mark Wagner, President, Twin City and Western Railroad and Minnesota Prairie Line Railroad. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. We are the operator of this rail line. So we're the railroad that supplies the engines, the cars, and the people and the maintenance crews to keep this rail line going. The contract that we have with the Rail Authority in the state of Minnesota requires us to maintain this rail line to the condition it's rehabbed to. So this is not a case of where you've heard elsewhere where a rail line is rehabilitated just to be run into the ground again. We are obligated to maintain this rail line, and we take that obligation very seriously. What brings us here today is the condition of the rail, particularly. And we brought some samples of the rail so that you could see what we're talking about. The rail, the physical rail that the rail cars traverse on this 94 miles is the 80-pound rail variety, which is the second from the end. It's a smaller rail. It was standard in the 1890s. This rail was actually installed, used in this rail line in the 30s, but the rail is close to 100 years old. And we inspect that rail after every loaded train to ensure that we do not derail. We operate this rail line at 10 mile an hour. Despite all those precautions, we had a derailment in the December of 2006 right by the city of Hamburg toward the east end of the line. The rail physically snapped, stabbed the rail car, and 4 of them tipped over. This despite all of our inspections. We're concerned because we're hauling ethanol. Thankfully, it stabbed a distiller's dried grain car, but still, with the ethanol that we're hauling, we, the operator, elected to reduce the speed of the ethanol trains from 10 mile an hour to 7, and we've limited the amount of cars per train to 25 to keep our ethanol plant competitive in the market. But long term, we can't survive, the rail line can't survive with those kinds of economics. So what this bond money is going to be used for is to put the 115-pound rail in. That will enable us to originate 100-car trains at Winthrop and run them right through into St. Paul, hand them off to the other railroads where they can bring it to California to serve the California market. But more importantly, what this does, when we started in this process in 2002, and at that time, the attitude was, we got to get this rail line running because the businesses along here need it to survive. Now, after 5 years of running it, we are now hearing, we need to upgrade this rail line because we're losing business opportunities in South Central Minnesota because they come out and see the rail line. It becomes a limiting factor. We've had inquiries from Canada, firms that want to locate out in Redwood County, and then they look at the rail and they say, well, gee, we'd like to, but how long can you guys survive with this kind of rail? And so the investment that we're asking in this publicly owned infrastructure does pay the state dividends. It pays in both road maintenance, as Gene said, but it also pays in safety. And with the governor's greenhouse gas reduction task force, of which I sat in as a member, trains emit about one-tenth the greenhouse gas emissions that a truck does. So we're being environmentally friendly as well. The other thing, when you're investing in rail, I'm not saying that 115-pound rail is going to last 100 years, But the rail we're operating on certainly has lasted a long, long time, and we would vision this rail replacement to last 40-plus years, which is a significant amount of time for this kind of investment, and we will maintain it. So with that, I will pass it over to our shippers so they can describe the benefit they receive.
I have a question from Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make sure we distill those numbers as we come close to our hearing end time here. The train can go 7 to 9 miles an hour right now.
Yeah, our max speed on non-ethanol is 10 miles an hour. Ethanol, we run at 7 miles an hour.
If this upgrade happens, what could you be your miles per hour?
25.
Right now, you could take about 20 cars?
25.
Well, how many cars could you take if this upgrade happened?
110.
In addition to ethanol, and then, just tell me, what other company? We've got agriculture shippers along there. Who else?
We have, there's a dairy processor in Winthrop. There's a large egg processor in Gaylord that would love to use the rail, but for the fact that refrigerated rail cars with GPS on them cost significant, like $2-3 an hour while they're on our line. At 10 miles an hour, we can't get it there and load it and send it out economically. So what this does is it puts them into the world or the U.S. North American market where they can't have it today because the rail is just suspect.
And Mr. Chair, just one final question. This is a publicly owned freight rail line.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Do you hook up to a Class 1 in Hanley Falls?
Yes, we hook up to BNSF in Hanley Falls. And on the east end, through Twin City and Western, we hook up with Canadian National, Canadian Pacific, BNSF, Union Pacific, and the Twin Cities, as well as the Minnesota Commercial and the ICE railroads in the Twin Cities.
Next gentleman, you ready to testify?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Scott Blumhofer with Heartland Corn Products. Today, though, I come to you as the president of the Association of Shippers on the rail line. And on behalf of the shippers, I have summarized in a page that hopefully you have received, but the reason why this project rehabilitation is necessary at this point. One of our concerns, as Mr. Wagner has already addressed, is the congestion and the economics that causes, the economic problems that causes to the shippers currently. As he mentioned, the current condition limits car shipments of only 20 to 25 cars at a maximum of 10 miles per hour. In the case of Heartland Corn Products and ethanol cars, 7 miles per hour. With the increasing demand of the shippers, it's become imperative that rail cars have to be moved more efficiently. That is currently. Now, if we consider growing our company or any of the shippers consider growing along the line, the speed at how we move those cars in and out becomes even more important. And to remain freight competitive in any of our industries, it's going to become not just a want, but a need in a few years to be able to bring in 100, 110 car trains, load them, and ship them out, and keep them all hooked together. So that is, to remain competitive in our industries, we're going to have to do that. Another one of our concerns is safety. Mr. Wagner already described to you what happened with some of our distillers' cars about a year ago. They can check and recheck these lines, but 100-year-old, 80-pound rail, when we're running the number and size of cars over them that we are currently, he explained what can happen. And with springtime coming and the ground softening up, we kind of hold our breath as we move the ethanol and distillers cars out. The bed gets soft, and we hope that it holds together. Finally, but not least amount, is the shippers recognize that there's a state benefit for this project. Every rail car that we ship out is the equivalent of about 3.5 semis. As an example, Heartland Corn Products produces about 18 rail cars a day of product, including both ethanol and distillers grains. That's the equivalent of about 63 semi loads per day, which comes to about 20,000 semi-loads per year that we can keep off of the highways by using this rail line. That reduces the wear and tear, reduces traffic congestion, and reduces the chances of accidents by keeping those trucks off the road. So in summary, I'd like to point out that to maintain competitive freight for our current shippers, to allow for increased and safe growth in rail shipments, and with all the benefits of reduced traffic on our roads, the time for this railroad improvement project has come.
Thank you, Mr. Blumhofer. Any questions? Representative Hortman.
Well, I'd just like to say this is the kind of project that we need to support if we're going to meet the goals for greenhouse gas reductions that we put in the Next Generation Energy Act. The governor convened stakeholders this summer and fall, and they worked on a plan to reduce emissions in the transportation sector. One of the things that they recommended and one of the things that we need to be doing is keeping our freight rail structure strong so that we can reduce the emissions, as they've already talked about. So I hope that this is something that will be successful. I don't know how competitive or how hard it is to get in that bonding bill, but I hope this one leads to some success.
Any other questions? Thank you. Did you, other gentlemen, Mr. Johnson, is it?
Yes. My name is Jim Johnson. I'm the Grain Division Manager for United Farmers Co-op based out of Winthrop, Minnesota. I also am the Vice President of the Shippers Association for this line. Our company on the west side runs on North, South, and Highway 15. We have three elevators over there, Klausner, Winthrop, and Lafayette. On the east side of our company, we have Le Sueur, and kind of on the north side of our company, we have Arlington. We have five elevators that we run. Our company does grain. We do fertilizer, agronomy. We do fuel. We do feed. We're a full-service co-op, have large membership in the area. I guess what I'd like to highlight is something that is not as measurable or as defined as some of the information you've received, but is absolutely very real for what's going on. And essentially, this railroad today has become a limiting factor for economic growth in our area, tied to ag primarily. The aspect I'm trying to highlight again is with ag. This railroad runs through some of the most productive land in the state. Our farmers, our members, are doing everything they can to increase production, primarily more grain. We as a co-op are doing everything we can to move that grain, but also to supply them with input, particularly fertilizer. And we would submit that the logistics involved with what I'm talking about are huge. The farmers today are putting, they're maximizing their inputs, fertilizer, the best feed, the best equipment to get yield. Technology is doing everything it can. Because of the prices of commodities, the whole economics of doing that are there. And so we are going to see increased volumes of grain moving throughout the state, throughout the area. So we submit that improvement to this line is going to be critical for that piece of growth in the area and the ag side. And clearly, with the local economy, if the farm, the ag economy is doing well, the local economy will also grow with it. And frankly, state taxes, funds to the back of the state will be following. Any questions?
Any questions? If not, I'd like to call Mr. Short back for a couple questions. Mr. Short, I see this is for a request for a grant. You've used the revolving loan fund before. I think that's the railroad fund we have. And I have the chair of the bond committee here. I'm not objecting to this. I'm just wondering, it's going to be real difficult probably to get that amount of money. Would you anticipate you spend that the first year, or how long would it take you to change your trackage?
Mr. Chair, the estimates from MnDOT's division have been that it's about $400,000 a mile for rehabbing this rail. I would anticipate that we could use the entire $15 million within the 2009 construction year. It's going to take that long for MnDOT to develop the plans and specs and so on to facilitate doing this. But were it not for that time frame, we could be doing it within 90 days.
The entire 95 miles?
Not no. The entire 95, sir. It will take approximately $15 million to do the route from Hamburg, Minnesota, out to and just beyond Winthrop.
I'm not trying to share the fire. I'm just trying to figure out how we could handle it. It just appears to me Representative Hausman probably's got a problem with $30 million. Representative Hausman.
Yeah. And in fact, Mr. Chair, I'm glad you raised that. I thought I heard them say before you could even do it over a four-year period, that it could be phased over a 4 years. Did I understand that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, we're willing to work with whatever we can do with the legislature, and we need to be somewhat responsive and willing to do that as well to accomplish this. And I feel that this is something that we can do, and it's taken us this long to get where we're at, and if we have to do this in segments, that's the way we will do it.
And Mr. Chair, I was curious. I wondered if I would learn something here today about other revenue that might be out there. What's the revolving loan fund?
That's what I was going to ask him again. If he's utilized, there's a revolving loan fund that we have set up, and it doesn't have much money in it, but it's been picking up a little money because it's a revolving fund, and that's sometimes on loans and sometimes on grants, and it's operated by MnDOT. And I believe somebody might be in the audience that takes care of that. Mr. Short, we could call someone from the audience too to have more. Are you going to have to do something on the roadbed too, Mr. Short, or not?
Pardon me?
Is this strictly the roadbed or the track and the rails? That's all, you have to do something in the roadbed too, or not?
Mr. Chair, this is
the whole works.
Basically, it's the rail, the ties, and some additional ballast. The rail bed is, in fact, there.
We could have the gentleman from MnDOT, if he could just explain the revolving loan fund to us, if you would, please.
I wonder if it has any money.
I think that's the only fund that is available other than, might be some federal monies, right?
Yes, I'm Bill Gardner, Director of Freight, Rail, and Waterways with MnDOT. The Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program is a revolving loan fund assistance program. And we have invested about $5 million with this rail authority for the rehab of portions of the line, primarily ties and track bed and so forth, and a little bit of rail. We do have, as you indicated, Mr. Chair, a pretty modest balance of $4 to $5 million currently to service all needs, both shippers and rail authorities who apply and are granted or receive loans based on eligibility as we determine it. But we don't have nearly enough to meet this particular need.
No, I understand that, Mr. Gardner. But basically, it's been a revolving, it's a loan, not a grant. And the other, did we put some money in the last session, didn't we, or not? A million or two, or didn't we? Was it 5 million?
Mr. Chair, no, I believe last year $1 million was put into the Rail Service Improvement Program. Prior to that, we were able to get in 2000, I believe it was the year 2000, $5 million for the program, of which we were then able to borrow $4.8 million of that. That, Mr. Chair, is at 0% interest. It had a 15-year payback. So at this point, we have another 10 years to go, so there will be $4.8 million coming back into that program. And if we can build up the volume and build up the revenue, we can pay that loan back sooner, yes. So.
Mr. Gardner, how many applicants or how much money do you got out saying your request do you have this year from the regional rail groups?
We service both shippers, private industries who are looking for assistance for things like sidings and grain bins, as well as rail authorities looking to do the larger larger rehabs. And we have more, at this point, more of the shipper requests for their facilities, usually a couple of million dollars worth of projects per year.
And that revolving loan fund, we've never been over $5 million, as I remember. Is that correct?
In terms of balance on hand,
even
I don't...
basically balance and, yeah, total monies. I think that kind of hovers around the $5 million, as I remember. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And we do receive occasional new appropriations because the payback periods mm-hmm. are so long on these loans that we need some regular infusions to keep the program going.
Are you able to leverage any federal monies?
Not per se. There is a federal loan program that does have its own criteria, but they are pretty selective in what they fund.
Are there questions from the committee? Representative Hausman, do you have a question, Mr. Gardner?
No, this was helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gardner. Mr. Short, do you have any other comment?
I thank you for allowing us to testify this evening.
I think it's really it's a project. I know we have many projects that Representative Hausman has, and one of the things that determines in the capital investment, of course, is future. If it generates economic development, also how quickly it can be implemented, because supposedly we're in a downturn and want to take care of stuff they can do, take care of right away and put everybody to work. So,
Mr. Chair, and if we can get this accomplished in the year 2009, we will celebrate our 125th anniversary, and we expect the entire committee to come and join us in that celebration.
That'd be fine. No further questions? Right. Chair will renew his motion that House file, what is it, 1785, be held over for possible inclusion in the transportation bonding bill, Representative Hausman's bill.
And, Mr. Chair, I think you're coming to that committee on Monday to make a recommendation to us with all of your...
Apparently, not aware. I think, unless there's some further comment, thank you very much, Mr. Short. And, you know, they're all good projects. We've got to get some money on them.
Thank you.
We appreciate your coming. And thank you for, I assumed you were going to stay over, but I didn't know about the other guys.
I'm the longest distance away.
I know your past history. St. Paul, I'm going to alert the troops again. And if no further business before the committee, we have a meeting scheduled for next meeting's February 20th, which is Thursday, I believe, 4 p.m.
Wednesday.
Tomorrow. Oh, yeah, it's tomorrow. It's Wednesday. It's tomorrow. This is a full committee? Tomorrow is Wednesday, right? I don't want to make it. The finance committee's next meeting is Thursday. That's the 21st.
Yeah.
No further questions. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.